Three, two, one, let's get it.
Welcome, morning, evening, afternoon. Thanks for coming back and listening so soon. Bring in the stories of everyday folks while you sit back, relax, have a whiskey, coach. Here we go with the Trend Speak podcast, bringing you insight or bringing a laugh. Here's the man who might have a plan. Give it up for your host, Trent Podskaland.
Thank you, Isaiah, for that introduction. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back indeed to us all. Wow. I went back and looked, and the last episode that had been posted was from November 10 of 2020. So a year and about 2 weeks ago was the last time we've been together like this. So thank you for being back. Thank me for coming back. I was listening to that episode before I hit record on this one just to see what I had talked about. And feel free to go back and listen to it. It was Cheers to 28, episode 94. And one of the things I talked about was living in the past versus living in the moment. I was preaching about living in the moment more. You know, the podcast has been on top of my mind a lot, and it's easy to make excuses. It's easy to say, well, I just don't have enough room. It's a lot of work to set up and to tear down. I'm going to do it. And it's so much easier to not do it. It's so much easier to not put in the effort, to not put in the energy. And you could say that about anything. It's not just about me podcasting. It could be about working out. It could be about a lifestyle change or a career change or something else that you're thinking about. So maybe you can't relate to not wanting to do a podcast, but maybe there's something else that you just haven't had the energy to put in the effort that you truly need to put in. Because a lot of times, it's not that we don't have the time. It's that we don't want to take that extra step. It's a lot of work sometimes. And once we get ourselves in that mindset, it's hard to get out. It's hard to push through. And so here's what I need from you. Here's what I ask from you each and every week, because I am making the dedication now to continually bring you episodes each and every week as I used to. I'm making the dedication now to not go on an over-year hiatus, because it was very much a, all right, well, I'll take a little break. And like I said, once you get out of the routine of something, it is much harder to jump back into it. You know, one of the things that I was able to do in the time that we haven't talked was back in April of this year, I was able to give a 3-hour presentation to student affairs professionals at Purdue Fort Wayne. Shout out to them for reaching out to having me come and speak on mental health and college students and depression and anxiety. It was wonderful to share some different stats and statistics and to share my own personal story and to have that conversation with them. And this is what I've missed. You know, I've missed talking to people. I've missed being able to share other people's stories, because I always said this was going to be an outlet to share other people's stories. It's almost like I've taken away that outlet by not doing the podcast. I often will go on YouTube at work and use YouTube as my media player. Long story short, I'm having trouble signing into my Spotify because I'm not allowed to access social media. Blah, 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 blah. So I use YouTube, and one morning I was looking for motivational music, just something to like upbeat, keep me going for the day. When I had seen this little video, it was about 10 minutes long about these motivating speeches from different celebrities and everything. It's like, I'll give it a shot. I'll listen to it. And it really got me thinking the entire time about just do the podcast. Just start it back up. Because again, it goes back to the episode Cheers to 28 that I posted, the last one that I posted before my year-long hiatus that I didn't realize was going to turn in that long, about living in the moment because you just don't know how much time you have left. And I feel like I'm here to help share other people's stories. I'm here to help you to be able to relate to other people and to know that you're not alone in going through whatever it is you may be going through. And sometimes we may hear these stories from other people. We might not experience the exact same thing, but we may be able to draw some sort of parallel to our own life where there is some sort of connection that we're able to work through together. I am going to be pulling interviews out of the vault every now and again. Since I did do some recording last year, I have some in the vault that were from June of 2020, but I feel are still applicable for you to hear. For one, those people to get their stories out, and two, for you to be able to hear those stories and hopefully take something away from them as well. And so I promise to be back next week, delivering you more content. Again, please hold me accountable if I am not doing so. I need you to blow up my TrentSpeaks@gmail.com email. I need you to go on my Trent Speaks Facebook and my Trent Speaks Instagram. And let me know if I am under-delivering the promise that I'm setting forth here on out. If you ever want to be a guest, feel free to hit me up in those avenues as well. Again, Trent Speaks on Instagram and Facebook, as well as TrentSpeaks@gmail.com. Without further ado, this is someone that I was really excited to talk to. Back in June of 2020, I had done probably, maybe about 25 interviews or so within 3 days, which was a lot of interviews for me to do. Maybe even more than that, I don't remember at this point. But this was one of the people I was most excited to talk to because he had sent me a media kit and everything. There's a lot of different points that I wanted to touch base with him on. And one of the things he had talked about was, you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but he is someone who is doing great work. And so I will talk to you next week, but I hope you enjoy this interview that I had with Roman. Yeah, and to start out, you didn't grow up in the U.S. You're not even from the U.S. So talk to me about growing up. You grew up in the Soviet Union and then immigrated here from Ukraine.
Yep. So I left Ukraine. I was five. So I came here when I was five. Ukraine got its independence in 1992. I came here in 1990. We went through Vienna, Austria, Rome, Italy. And then here we had a sponsor, a distant relative, but that was kind of the path in terms of from Eastern Europe to coming here. Kind of, I don't know how to even explain it, but I think everybody from the Eastern European countries kind of made those stops. So I came with my grandparents, my mom, my dad, my younger brother, and my aunt to a 2-bedroom apartment. And I kind of got thrown into kindergarten right away, which was good because learning a language young enough, you don't retain an accent. So I kind of went to English second language for about a year or two, learned the language, and then kind of, did my thing and was pretty easily assimilated into kind of the culture, you know, the friends of kind of different ethnicities and, walks of life in different parts of the world as well. So I kind of moved to a town where there was a lot of immigrants from different places like Spain, Portugal, other places in Europe and other parts of the world, South America. So it was kind of a melting pot, which obviously the experiences I got a lot more than I would have in Ukraine, which obviously, you know, it's predominantly Ukrainian, Russian or Slavic. So I think those experiences really kind of molded me and made me who I am.
Well, and that's a lot to go through. I feel like moving and immigrating to another country at only the age of 5 years old. I'm going to ask this question. I don't know if you can even speak on it because you were so young, but what was that experience like? Do you remember it all?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was more of a heavier burden for the adults that I traveled with, my parents, grandparents, and my aunt. But I know we can only take what I guess we could carry. So everything else we had to leave behind and kind of leave everything because it was still kind of the Soviet Union. So technically we really came with not even a country because they kind of stripped the citizenship when you left. I mean, the U.S. had an understanding that we're legally coming here with a sponsor and, you know, automatically became, you know, legal aliens and got a green card and all that. And then later citizenship. But it was one of those things leaving technically without a country because the Soviet Union was still going on. Like I said, Ukraine got its independence in 92. And I remember Vienna, Austria a little bit, Rome, Italy a little bit, and then coming here. I mean, I've been back to both places. But, you know, the journey itself took actually a few months to get here. And then I kind of had to do what I had to do. I was put in school and then, you know, learn the language, and then everybody had to start working. And I mean, it was a 2-bedroom apartment. Nobody really complained. I know a lot of people complain now with the pandemic and being shelter in place, but I mean, I was little, so those kind of things didn't really impact me. I guess I just wanted to, you know, spend time with my relatives that I traveled with and kind of do my own thing in terms of learning and playing.
Why the U.S.? Why immigrate here of all places?
There was a lot of the kind of the Soviet Union lessened immigrating. I guess obviously it fell a few years later completely. But like I said, I had distant relatives here and other people in terms of family went to California, went to the East Coast, went to Ohio. So it was kind of one of those things.
All over
everybody
the place.
Everybody started leaving. I do have family in Argentina. I haven't been to Argentina. I have family in Australia, which I haven't been yet. But it was one of those things where, you know, everybody kind of got out wherever they could.
Have you been back to Ukraine at all to visit and to just kind of go hang out for a little bit leisurely?
Yep. I mean, I've been back in 2006 and 2008 before the whole annexation of Crimea and all that happened. So I was in college and then right after college, beginning of college or mid-college, and then right after finishing college, visiting family members that were still there, kind of just traveling the country. I guess in 2006, it was the World Cup. So I experienced that, which was Ukraine was in the World Cup and they won in like a penalty shootout. So the atmosphere was cool to experience in the country that, you know, won that kind of penalty shootout and that knockout round. So just a lot of things. I mean, traveling there, I remember because obviously I left when I was young. So different landmarks and things like that. Had things that were in my subconscious come up, those memories. So it was cool in that sense as well.
What did you study when you were in college?
I studied criminal justice and my last semester I interned with the Secret Service on the counterfeit currency squad. I attained a top secret federal clearance and basically I thought I was going to go the criminal justice route. But right when I graduated in 2007, 2008, the economy crashed. So I was forced to kind of apply for months after, you know, month for a while and kind of got down and depressed. And then I had an opportunity to pivot into digital marketing and out of necessity, I took it, ran with it and have been doing it ever since.
So a lot of different routes I want to go here. How did you get the opportunity even to intern with the Secret Service? That's not just something you can necessarily walk off the street and walk straight into the Secret Service to get. You got to go through a lot of steps and a lot of processes, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I went through the university, but then I had to come in for an in-person interview. I had an investigator assigned to my, I guess, application. There was a 6-month kind of background process where they went through my background because, I mean, even an intern, they could see different movements of dignitaries, different other things that were kind of, you know, sensitive in terms of the information that if you had it and if it was time sensitive and passed on, it could probably do a lot of damage in terms of, you know, harm. So it took 6 months. I got approved. And then the fall semester of 2007, I had that. I took it for credit and wrote like a thesis paper about it. And then basically that was my last thing before I graduated.
I'm sure that was an awesome experience for you though.
It was interesting learning about currency and the different kind of things that to look for in each denomination. There's like hundreds of things. So obviously a bill can be really, really good or like crappy, like somebody just prints it on an inkjet printer. But you kind of narrow it down. So if one thing is wrong, you eliminate it. But if it keeps going, it's right, you go deeper and deeper and deeper. And eventually there's enough things to disqualify. And then we did things like go to the shooting range, which was interesting for interns. So we shot like their shotguns, their six SARs, which is the handgun they use, MP5, like fully auto. So it was kind of like a video game. You put it on single shot, semi-auto and auto. So it was pretty cool.
Did you have a favorite gun that you shot?
I would say the MP5.
Why that one?
I mean, it was just like an easy to use, very compact, not much recoil, and very accurate.
And you talked about how you kind of started to go into with the recession and everything. Man, what a, I can't even imagine what a time to graduate. I mean, we have all of this going on right now with the pandemic of coronavirus and stuff with unemployment and everything. I can't imagine what people are going through right now, but I think back to 2008 and how bad that one was. I can't even imagine what it's like to graduate college and to be in that position.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough, you know, mentally just graduating, thinking you're going to, you know, have a job kind of handed to you in a way. I think a lot of kids coming out of college have that mentality because they have that education. They're automatically kind of set. But I think people even graduating from college this year or the following year, if they can't find anything, then it may be a good opportunity to pivot like I did and find other opportunities. And I think the economy is changing to be a lot more remote and companies can function remotely.
And I know that I read that you were self-taught with all your digital marketing. Like how much did you actually know going into it all?
Absolutely nothing. I had to start from scratch. I didn't really like anything in terms of computers or coding or marketing. I didn't really learn anything in school. So it's kind of like, I need to do this and I need to do it right to be successful at it.
So how did you know what steps to take? How do you even know where to begin? Because I guess when you're, I don't know. How do you know where to begin?
Well, the person that I met, I actually met them at the gym and they said, I need this, you know, done, come out. I have a job opportunity for you. Come out after your workout. And I went and they opened their trunk and they handed me a 50-page packet. So I read that. They said, read that, take another month or two, learn like the basics online, and then you can start doing this for my business. So I kind of like ground up, learned, and then kind of pivoted, got other opportunities. And then it's kind of like, you know, real world experience. You get campaigns to work on, you test things, you test different strategies and kind of become proficient at it.
Now, obviously, it's hard to answer without having fully worked with your criminal justice degree aside from the internship. Do you feel like this is what you're supposed to be doing, though, like the digital marketing route and everything? Do you feel like you were happy with kind of going that route and everything?
I would say so. I think it's because it's such an ever-changing field. So you constantly have to keep learning, constantly kind of refreshing your skill set. So I think it is important. And I think it's one of those things that I became really good at. And there's a lot of psychology involved, which carries over from kind of that criminal justice side in terms of reading people, understanding kind of user behaviors and what makes people tick and really connects with people emotionally. So I think there was a lot of carryovers, but obviously the informational stuff, the facts and the knowledge was learned. And I kind of, like I said, ran with it.
Well, and as a consumer, I've seen the growth from my side where I just use social media and internet and everything like that. But I'm sure from the digital marketing standpoint, you've really seen the growth over the last 5, maybe even push it to 10 years because of everything that's coming out and because everything has kind of just started to take off. I've talked with a couple of people recently about how even podcasts, it wasn't that big 5 years ago. And even just within the last 2, maybe even just even the last 1 year, we've really seen it grow. How have you seen things grow and change in the digital marketing realm?
Yeah. So when I started in 2008-ish, it was like the Wild West, especially search engine optimization, which is kind of the building block that got me into digital marketing. So people can manipulate the system, really influence search engines and kind of get their websites ranked organically and drive a lot of traffic. And then in terms of quality purposes, a search engine like Google wants to deliver the best results and get the best engagement. So they're going to show the top results on the first page. So then they started introducing different algorithm updates. So things like the Panda update, the Penguin update, to kind of deter bad content, duplicate content, bad links to your website, things of that nature, and kind of cut down on the manipulation and kind of like the optimization just for search engines and kind of doing the wrong things. So I think over time, things basically evened out kind of the playing field. Obviously, if you're working for a big brand with a powerful site, you can do a lot more, a lot quicker just based on that authority. But social media wasn't really that popular or that big. So when I got onto Facebook in 2004, you just needed still to be a college student. So I registered with my college email account. And then obviously they moved over to the general public. And I think Twitter was in its general infancy still there. And then LinkedIn came out. And those are the really three, but the behaviors weren't necessarily the same. Like LinkedIn now is more of a content platform and an authority platform, not only just to look for jobs and recruiters contacting you. And things came out like Instagram and now TikTok. So kind of my job is to always understand what's coming out, test it, and see how I can apply it and use it to clients and businesses, how to help them drive traffic and basically reach their target audience in terms of messaging. So stuff like TikTok, people were kind of like talking for the last few months about TikTok being very young and people just doing, dances and lip syncing. And then the pandemic happened. And I think the demographic got really old really quick because of, people like, okay, let me see the app, what's going on. And out of sheer boredom started kind of playing around with it. So then I got on it. I don't necessarily have a strategy, but I thought to myself with TikTok, all of my content, because I am a foster parent, is my experience with the foster care system. I always kind of do interviews, talk about my frustrations, things that I found that need improvement, how I can advocate for the kids. So a lot of that is my experiences about being a foster parent, and how I'm advocating for the foster children, which I've had 20 kids in my home since June of 2018. And basically seeing how that content performs. So one of the posts basically is at 101,000 views and like 6,000 likes. Obviously, the next step for me would be, a million plus views. But it's just like reverse engineering the system and really understanding what's going on in terms of how content is performing and what makes you go viral, what makes you connect to a user base. And actually, I got an interview opportunity because a publication in Manhattan saw a post about how I'm dealing with having four children under the age of six with COVID during COVID. And the fact that we have 20 hours of calls that we have to supervise every week because the caseworkers don't necessarily do that now. I mean, for me, I don't know what they're doing in terms of the time because we have check-ins for like 5 minutes. So there's a frustration there. But they saw that post and they're like, it was really interesting. We would like to feature you in a piece. And basically, I took advantage of that opportunity. So if I was never on TikTok and never tested and never put content out, that opportunity most likely than not wouldn't have presented itself.
What have you enjoyed most about working in digital marketing?
I would say the amount of people that I met, especially in the beginning of my career, that really helped kind of network and then propel me and basically collaborate in the future, founding my own agency in 2012, and then having kind of a body of work that a lot of people already knew, and kind of you're basically judged on your results in digital. So you can't really fake that. It's not one of those things where you can, fluff it. I mean, I guess, but with the internet and with social media and with references, you can probably spot check it and kind of weed out the people that are just generalizing and don't necessarily have results. So I think in that sense, just the amount of people I've met and the industry being really collaborative and everyone's always happy to kind of help. If they find something out, like the new strategy or tactic, I'm usually, collaborating in that sense and seeing if it works in other industries. So I think when I started, the amount of people I met right away, that's why I encourage people, regardless if they're an introvert or extrovert, get out there, network, meet people, because you don't know where that kind of relationship may lead in the future.
You know, I've heard this more times in the past few months than I have in my whole entire life, but building the plane as you fly it, it almost sounds like digital marketing is a lot of trial and error. Is that a challenge that you kind of enjoy, is trying to figure out what works, what doesn't, and trying to figure out how to tweak things?
For certain things, yes, it's definitely trial and error, but certain things that you learn and become an expert in, you know it's going to work for that industry. If you've had, let's say, 100 clients in the legal vertical or pharma life sciences, and you've tried and tested this and it's worked for every single one, you're most likely to have that success. But like you said, if something is new or it's in infancy, like a social media platform from the organic content side and from the paid, because like I mentioned, TikTok, they're really refining kind of their paid offering. And the more it grows, the more it changes in terms of pricing, in terms of the product itself. So you really have to understand that. I mean, the same thing happened with Facebook. It was very organic and they released their ad platform. And then now, you know, only a fraction of your community sees your posts, because they encourage you to either boost them, run a campaign for them, for your community to see it, and then obviously amplify it to other people that are qualified as well.
Well, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago how you fostered 20 kids within about 2 years. What really got you into wanting to go the foster parent route?
So one thing is, last 3 years, my wife and I have experienced 5 miscarriages. So we've had an infertility journey. We've spent about $100,000 out of pocket on infertility treatments, because insurance only, you know, covers a certain amount. And then past that, it's out of pocket. Different genetic testing. We had one IUI and 4 IVFs. Two of the miscarriages happened on back-to-back Christmases with people over. So that was, you know, tough and traumatic in that sense. So we thought, you know, we can help kids, because technically we're designated as foster to adopt. So if we have children in our home, we've had them for a while and parental rights are terminated, they come to us first and see, you know, if it's a good fit and we're willing to adopt the kids. So that was one of the kind of driving the things we experienced with the miscarriages, the ability to help kids and possibly grow our family in the process as well.
So how many kids do you have at a time?
Well, it's dependent on what your house is licensed for. So we could have got licensed for up to 7 kids, but we're licensed for 5, and we've had 5 kids at once. Wow. During the whole COVID thing, since beginning of March to now, we've had 4 boys under the age of 6.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot, and everything, I feel like everything in the last 3 months gravitates around their nap time and bedtime, and that kind of just guides everything.
What has that experience been like for you as a foster parent of, because I mean, you're still a parent. So what has that experience been like having 4 children under the age of 6? Because really, I'm sure that the ages range as well. Like you have, it's not just children that you've had under 6. I'm sure you've had a range of ages. Yeah.
We've mainly had younger kids. So the oldest child we've had is 9. You can really specify if you want teens, and kind of run the gambit, you know, a newborn, a teen, but it's dependent on what the foster parent, you know, says they can handle and what their current situations are. Obviously, some people aren't ready for newborns. Other people don't necessarily want teens at this point in their house or home. So you have that kind of distinction. You can give that range, obviously, but we've had kids, like I said, from 9 to 2 months. So that's kind of the gambit. And, everyone comes with their own challenges. A lot of people outside of, you know, foster care, we're in a bunch of foster care kind of support groups where people really understand, because I feel like the general community, you know, oftentimes said, oh, you're doing a great thing, but they don't necessarily know, which it's different than a biological child. You're getting a child that has experienced trauma, you know, emotional, physical, sexual abuse, and there's a lot of triggers, and it's like you're meeting them for the first time, and it's like a newborn. So you have to learn exactly what makes them tick, what makes them, they could be triggered by something, a noise, a movie, you know, an image that brings them back to a, you know, a dark place, and they can really like shut down. So really understanding each child, because each child is different, and really giving that child what they need in terms of advocating for them for therapy, working with them at home, and really getting them mentally and physically to a good place where they can be, you know, a happy kid and just be a kid again.
Well, I imagine that'd be very difficult because not only do you have this stranger, basically, you are both strangers to each other. You're trying to build a rapport with one another and live together. And it's only for a limited amount of time. And then you're leaving each other again. So I imagine that has to be difficult to, one, build that rapport in the middle of nowhere. And then two, you've built that rapport and you have that relationship. And all of a sudden, now you're not together anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough regardless if we had the child for, let's say, 2-3 days where it's kind of an emergency respite where you help another foster family for a few days if they need a break or they go on vacation and they can't take care of their child. Or a long-term placement, the longest we've had was a year. It was actually a first placement. We were positioned as that, you know, just getting the kids saying, you know, they're probably going to move towards adoption and going into it like having a different feeling because you're guided by that principle that you'd possibly be adopting them. So getting really close to them for a year and then having them, you know, get reunified with the biological mom, which she, in that case, she's probably the only one out of 20 that went above and beyond to do everything to get them back. So even though it hurts us, we actually work to rebuild the relationship. That's another story that kind of the caseworker destroyed between us and her. And after a year, actually 2-3 weeks ago, we actually got to see them briefly. So now we're on kind of speaking terms with the mom, and hopefully in one form or another we can be in their lives. But there's just different situations. Each case is different. But like you said, you can have a child for a weekend or a year, 2 years. It's still impactful on you and you're still kind of, you know, sad about it. So I mean, being a foster parent is definitely, you know, an up and down kind of roller coaster ride.
Well, I was gonna bring that up. I'm sure on the flip side it's also very rewarding in the same regard.
It is rewarding. It's it definitely, you see the changes. So a child comes and oftentimes removed right away and placed in your home, very scared, confused, and you really see how they grow, how they learn, how they kind of become, you know, become to heal and begin to heal. And obviously, my wife and I play a part in that process. So knowing that, you know, we've been impacting children like that, and hopefully one day they remember that, or the time they spent in our home really show them how, you know, they could be treated in their, you know, lives, because oftentimes they go back to the exact same situation. There is a higher recidivism rate where they end up back in the system because the same things happen to them again, or they see the same things, or the, you know, the living environment isn't safe. So hopefully we show kids that there's a different way. You know, there are loving families that really care about them, and what they've known in the past and what they may know in the future isn't what, you know, the only thing that there is out there. There are people that care about them and love them, and there are safe places for them to be.
Well, and I will say my heart definitely hurt for you when I was reading about the 5 miscarriages in 3 years, and even just hearing you say that, like it's hard to hear. What really brought you to the forefront of being comfortable to kind of talk about that with people? Because that's not something people normally talk about or bring up. Like, it's usually a very private thing. What made you feel comfortable to kind of start bringing that out a little bit more and sharing that with others?
So, I mean, I switched over to an interview format on my podcast in March of 2019. And I think it was a coping mechanism. My grandfather passed away in February of the previous month. And switching over, being really like raw and candid with people about my experiences helped me heal. So then I'm like, whatever, I'm an open book. So like in the last year and a half, I've done about 65 interviews. And each interview, I think I've gotten deeper and deeper because I've seen feedback where people actually needed to hear that. And oftentimes people don't necessarily hear a male perspective talking about, you know, having a miscarriage or being part of that process with your wife or your partner or significant other. And the fact of, I mean, there's a lot of moms talking about being foster moms and fostering, but not a lot of dads. One or two I see on social media that I'm connected with and in general, but people aren't really vocal about it. And I think it's important to advocate if you've went through something, because there's people that will go through something, have been through it, or are going through it now. So regardless of what it is, it may make you feel a little uncomfortable, but I think that conversation is important to have.
Yeah. And I can imagine how how hard it is on the mother in those situations. And I think people often forget that there's also a father who's going through the same thing. So what was that like, having to make sure that you were there for your wife and really helping her through it and helping her emotionally, mentally, physically through it, but also trying to deal with your own emotions at the same time?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even going to attempt to understand what my wife has been through it in the process. I've tried to be there. I mean, we've went to therapy about it together. We've discussed it together, but her impact, it was her body. What plays into that infertility thing, I had to, before every egg transfer, I've had to give her hundreds of needles in her back of, hormones and different things. So there's that toll. So she's still not 100%. We, after this whole COVID thing, because we have embryos frozen, we may try to do another, a transfer at some point. Mm-hmm. But every time it like breaks down your body with all the hormones, and technically you're really not the same person. So she's experiencing a lot of physical pain and things of that nature, which I can't even relate to, caused from every single one. And every single miscarriage is that emotional toll. It's like, do we even want to do it? Because we've had five. It's like, yeah, happening and happening and happening and putting yourself through that kind of gambit over and over again. Do you really want to do it? And like I said, we've done it five times, and we're still naturally trying as well. But I mean, we'll see. I mean, we still want a biological child, but whichever way we happen to start a family, all in favor for.
Well, my heart definitely hurts for you, and I'll definitely be thinking about and praying for you guys and everything through that process. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your podcast. I know that you started the Digital Savage Experience podcast. Talk to me about how people can find that and what they can expect if they were to listen into the podcast.
Yep. So it's on every major platform, podcast platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, you name it, it's on there. I mean, the website is in progress, so there'll be kind of a pillar where you can, land and, interact with the show, myself a little bit more. But I would say a year, it was just me talking about kind of high level digital marketing tactics that really work, nothing like fluffy, where you can really take this and implement it in terms of your content strategy and it'll actually add value. Or my experience is meeting people, because 1 year it was very aggressive about meeting. So I met like Gary Vaynerchuk, Gerard Adams, Max Levchin, which is a co-founder of PayPal, and other people, all for free. So I was just trying to help people that, don't get discouraged where you think you have to pay thousands of dollars to talk to somebody, like, somebody you may idolize or somebody you may want to work with in the future. But really, go out there, do a little research and figure out where they are, where they spend time. Don't be afraid to go up to them. The worst you can get is a no in terms of a phone call, an email, a photo opportunity, whatever. The worst you can really get is a no and you can move on. So there was a lot of that when I became a foster parent. My experiences about, fostering, it was really my first placement, having those two boys that we thought we were going to adopt. And then, like I said, February 2019, my grandfather passed that I was close with. March, I switched to an interview format. So since March 2019 to now, I've done about 170 interviews.
Wow.
I'm going to, I probably release today or tomorrow episode 174. And like you said, you have 20 in queue. I have 65 in queue, which is, a good problem to have.
Yeah.
But I interview a wide range of people, startup founders, CEOs. I've had a former founding member of the Medellin drug cartel that changed their life around, found God, now is a speaker, wrote books, things of that nature, authors, brain specialists, and just basically where the audience can learn from their journeys, the hurdles they've been through, how they got to where they are now, things that they're doing, what currently motivates them, weaknesses they've turned into strengths, and really advice they can have for the audience. And then in between, it's just, a low-key conversation where we can really dive and have like a raw conversation, like we were talking about, me talking about my miscarriages. So really diving deep and seeing what's behind people, what people are struggling with, and not only like a top level superficial thing where, I may meet you at a marketing thing or somewhere and it's just like, hey, what's up? What's your name? What do you do? And it's just that top level conversation. really diving in, learning from people, and then me personally trying to take at least one thing and apply it from each interview, either what I've learned from the person, what the person does, and really growing through me doing the podcast as well.
It's always nice to be on this side of the microphone because I can ask the questions that I hate being asked. Is there a, and I'm not going to ask for one because as a fellow podcaster, I know how hard it is to answer, but is there one or a couple people that you've interviewed that really stand out to you?
Yeah. I mean, that person, like I said, Dr. Jorge Valdez, episode 164, because he came from a, like a kind of a straight edge. Like he was a straight A student. He got a job kind of at the Federal Reserve and then started, you know, doing accounting, and that his good record and the fact that he wouldn't be really looked at by federal authorities made him the perfect kind of person. And he kind of got seduced because he was young about the money, the material things. He was, you know, in South Florida, Miami area during the late 70s and 80s, where it was a big party scene, and just learning how he kind of came to terms, like feeling empty with everything he had, the tens of millions of dollars. I mean, at one point he was importing 500 to 1,000 kilos of cocaine into, wow, you know, Florida. So he was kind of heading up the North American operations in that sense. So really learning from situations like that, and then what made him change how he is now. I had a person that was a disaster avoidance specialist. So he really understands, you know, a lot of executives and companies make decisions that are bad decisions for their companies driven by emotion. So how they can take emotions out of it and ways to kind of reprogram your brain that decision is as best as possible and isn't driven by emotion. So I think those are the two. I mean, every episode I've taken something from, but those are kind of the two that have resonated with me.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. All right, a couple of Trent Speaks related questions for you. What has been the most impactful either event or moment in your life that has really shaped you and who you are today?
Earlier on, I think seeing the work ethic, like I said, my grandfather passed. He was a big role model in my life. He was retired in Ukraine. When he came here, he did roofing for another 20 years into his 70s. Wow. I mean, it's a tough job. There was people that were coming over in their 20s from Eastern Europe just to make some money and then go back, and they would quit after 2-3 weeks. So he was Monday through Saturday on a roof. Sunday, he would go to church, no complaints, no anything, and then, you know, did things for other people and give the shirt off his back. And I think that work ethic resonated with me. And then when he passed, obviously, that was kind of the first major passing in my life or my family. And I had a decision to make if I was just going to be down, just stop everything in terms of what I was doing, in terms of my goals and my drive. And then I had to remember where he told me he was proud of me for what I've achieved professionally. And the fact that, you know, I was a foster parent, that he was surprised. At first, he was kind of like, you know, not necessarily off, but like, you're going to put yourself through this, you know, this emotional roller coaster. And then he saw how we were impacting the kids, and then he was proud of me to basically raise kids that weren't even my own. So having that, and then seeing that I technically couldn't give up because I owed it more to him and my ancestors and my family before that, that basically went through a lot tougher things, in my opinion, that I owed it to them to give my best because, I mean, regardless of what's going on in the world, the U.S. economy is one of the most open still in terms of you achieving your goals professionally. And I kind of still ran with that. Like a personal thing, I think I got dared for, I believe, my 23rd birthday to go skydiving, and I'm definitely afraid of heights. I did it. It's basically every time I go on a plane, I see the plane crashing before it takes off. And it's just like, I fly a lot and travel a lot. And it's every single time, it's just like mental roadblock. But I did it. It was the best experience, probably just one of the experiences that I didn't want to do. My wife made me go swim with sharks or dive with sharks in Hawaii too. I didn't want to do that either. It was pretty cool. So I think the moral of the story of that is, there's a lot of things that will scare you, but they're scary because the human, you know, psyche is about self-preservation in terms of you as a, you know, an animal, a person, a human. So taking yourself out of your comfort zone and out of those set habits really can help you experience life in that sense as well.
What is it that you want people to take away from you when they listen to this podcast? What do you want people to learn and take away?
Just like at this point in my life, or at least for the past few years, that I'm more about legacy. So I try to do as much good as possible. I would say that I'm a heart-driven entrepreneur. So help as many people as possible, those around me, those people starting off that didn't get the pointers I did, that can really escalate their career and really ramp it up. And just being there and helping people, like through this interview, maybe that they're going through something, and add value in that sense, and just add as much value and not ask anything in return. So, you know, I sign on LinkedIn today. I have a bunch of people friend request me or connection request me. As soon as I hit accept, I get a pitch. So I try not to be about that, just to be as genuine as possible and just kind of show that there are genuine people that are driven out there and are willing to help other people along the way.
Roman, you have been a phenomenal guest and person to talk to over the last 40 minutes. And I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing as much as you did today about you and your story and your life. You're doing great work, especially in the being a foster parent and really taking that on. So I just want to say thank you and keep it up.
I appreciate it. I mean, hearing that from people really kind of makes a difference, because it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of hard times, a lot of things that we deal with the kids and with the system. So, I mean, there are times, I'm not going to lie, where we think about, you know, closing our home and stopping fostering. But, you know, hearing from people and seeing how the kids are really impacted by, you know, positive reinforcement and being in a safe place really, you know, keeps us going day after day.
Yeah, we'll keep it up. You're doing great work. Roman, thanks again for coming in and on the Trent Speaks podcast. Here's the fun part. And it's more fun when I don't tell people at the beginning and just throw them off, but you get to do the sign off. There's no script, no set way to sign off. However you want to do the sign off for your own podcast, it makes it your own. So I'm going to turn it over to you.
So I'm Roman Prokopchuk. I'm a podcaster. I've been in digital marketing for 12 years. I've experienced a bunch of stuff. I'm a foster parent. If any of that resonates to you after you listen to this episode, feel free to reach out and have a candid conversation, and hopefully I can help you in any way I can.